They're quoted all over the media, on TV, newspapers, magazines, anywhere there's a story to be told. Anonymous sources. Sometimes they're the benefactor to breaking some of the worst actions of government. Other times, they're the reason for the bad actions taken by those in power. The tremendous power of anonymous sources in journalism cannot be underestimated, but also shouldn't be taken as gospel. In this day and age, every purported leaker has a purpose, and every government has a responsibility to verify before reacting. Take the bogus AP reporting of the missile that hit Poland, killing two farmers. The initial report by an alleged anonymous source at the Pentagon blamed Russia, only to later be revealed that it came from Ukrainian forces. But nonetheless, world leaders reacted to that first flawed report. To talk more with us about the role of anonymous sources and how they can shape global policy is a veteran investigative reporter with a resume from the likes of the Boston Globe, Newsweek, and so many others. He is now the editor-in-chief at ConsortiumNews.com. Mr. Joe Lauria is here. Joe, thank you for being with us. Joe, my first question is, I'd like to know how important to you, how important are anonymous sources in the world of journalism?
Well, they've become increasingly important over the last few years, although a study I was just looking at showed, it was a 2011 study, it showed that it peaked in the 1970s and declined up until 2011. I don't know the data from then, 2011 to now, but it's an integral part, particularly of foreign policy and international relations and national security reporting. So it's a very, very tricky subject. I'm glad you have me on to talk about it, because it's fraught with lots of difficulties and dangers for the profession. If you rely on anonymous sources too much, you're in trouble, and you could also be misled by them, or you can willingly participate in basically disinformation for a variety of reasons. So it's a big topic.
Now, some argue that quoting anonymous sources in a story actually removes accountability. What's your view on that? Do some sources actually warrant staying anonymous?
Yes, obviously, in certain stories, they warrant remaining anonymous. This is the judgment that a reporter and an editor has to make. It's a thing you shouldn't abuse and use too much. I mean, let's say you're covering a negotiation, whether that be a union management negotiation or a diplomatic negotiation between countries, and you have somebody who's in the room, and you know they're in the room, and they're willing to talk to you, but obviously they cannot be identified, because they'd, for a whole number of reasons, they would be hurting their own position with their government or with their company or with their law firm, or they could screw up the negotiations if it's known that one side is leaking and not the other. But you really want to get the story. And the only way you know what's going on in that room is if you talk to somebody who's in there. And when they're a direct eyewitness, you could rely on the fact that they were present and that they probably know what's going on. Of course, they could mislead you. This is the tricky part. Since they're anonymous, they can get away with being, how should I say, disingenuous or misleading or outright lying to you to favor their position. That's why you've got to be very careful when you use only one anonymous source in the story. You'd want to get somebody from the other side in that negotiation and ask them the same questions. If you can't get the other side, you've got to make a decision whether you actually believe this person or not. And the way you could do that is not only by talking to another source, but trying to find other avenues to verify what they're saying. Again, you verified that they are in a position to know. They were in the room. Okay, that's fine. What they're telling you, does it jive with what was, let's say, said previously by his side or her side of the negotiation? Was that close to the positions that they'd taken earlier, or is it completely off the wall? Completely new direction, and you'd have to follow up and ask, how did this change? So you could suss out from interviewing this source whether he's telling you or she's telling you the truth or not. I could tell you a story where I got slightly burned once by my bureau chief. I was based 25 years at the United Nations headquarters in New York. I was the Wall Street Journal correspondent there, the Boston Globe correspondent, and for a time for the German press agency, DPA, the English service. And there was some behind-the-scenes, closed-door meeting that the Secretary General had with his top political advisors. I can't remember exactly what the issue was. It was just a big hot story of the day at the UN. It was sometime in the mid-90s. We're talking about almost 30 years ago, so forgive me for forgetting, but I did speak to someone who was in the room, and he told me something, and I had to make a decision. I believed him. It seemed to be valid based on what I already knew about the story and the context, and I put it out. When you're in a wire search, you're under even more pressure, especially in those days, because newspapers hadn't really gone on the internet in the way they are today, where they're almost acting like wire services themselves, since they want to get the story out on the internet. In those days, it was in the next day's newspaper, so you could take more time as a daily news reporter to actually nail down a story. You had a whole day, basically, to get a story for your normally 6 p.m. deadline, and even after that, you could add stuff. But the pressure, by the way, of newspapers being on the internet now is the same as on a wire service. So I published a story. The UN spokesman for the Secretary General denied it. My bureau chief got furious. They denied it, he said. I said, well, it doesn't mean it's not true. So just because an official source denies something doesn't mean that the source was not telling you the truth. So you report that they denied it, and you leave it out there and do as much as you can to inform the reader of the context of the story, and they can decide whether the official source denying it is telling the truth or whether the source is telling the truth. Yeah, ideally you want two sources, but if you can't and you think it's vital and that you feel secure enough in it, I think you can go with one source, but you can be burned, so you're going to be very, very careful about that. So that's just one example out of my own experience that I could tell you about.
So the AP story regarding the Ukrainian missile that struck Poland, it killed two. The AP reporter quoted a supposed anonymous DOD official when that story broke, alleging Russia had struck Poland. Volodymyr Zelensky ran with that story, as did many other leaders, effectively calling for a full-scale NATO response against Russia. Now, this could have led to a nuclear winter for the world. Within 48 hours, it turned out the AP reporter lied about the anonymous source after investigations on the ground revealed that the missile was actually Ukrainian. Now, had that story been allowed to further propagate, this really could have changed life on this planet as we know it. Your thoughts on that one?
Well, this is really the crux of the matter about anonymous sources, because you've got routinely people inside government, particularly the intelligence agencies, but also the Pentagon in this case, that will tell reporters things that further the interests of the U.S. or the agenda of the U.S. at that moment. That's why you've got to be very, very careful. But we've got a situation now of careerism in journalism, the pressure to get it right, to get it first rather than get it right, and this mentality that permeates corporate media of trust of government sources. And instead of the opposite, we should be more skeptical of people in government, particularly in intelligence agencies, because, I mean, part of their job description is disinformation. This is what they do. So you're going to be very careful when someone in the CIA or the FBI or the NSA tells you something, or the Department of Defense, or anyone in government at a high level on an international story of this kind of importance. Again, I said, there are instances where you could go with one source, in my opinion, if it's not that vital of a story. The more important it gets in terms of the consequences to the public, and in this case, yes, the possibility that it could have sparked a war between NATO and Russia, which could have gotten out of hand up to even including maybe a nuclear exchange. This is a story you really better make sure is correct. And the idea that this reporter went with one source was outrageous. But worse for me was that the editors agreed. They signed off on it. Somebody leaked those emails to the Washington Post. And we learned that the editors said, one editor was quoted saying, I can't imagine that a U.S. official would not be telling the truth about this. That was the clearest admission in decades of the problem of establishment media gullibly going along with what U.S. officials say. They believe in the red, white, and blue, that the U.S. is always telling the truth, that the U.S. interests around the world are noble, that we're spreading democracy, not geostrategic and economic interests, etc. And this is where This is the major problem we've got here. It's with the reporters, not with these anonymous sources, because you know what? They know. They know that journalists want the scoop. They could easily manipulate a reporter and telling them what they want to hear in order to get the story out there. If the CIA made a statement or the Pentagon directly, you know, especially an intelligence agency, it may not be believed by the public because, as I said, they were involved in disinformation as part of their job. But if they filter it or launder it through the New York Times, Associated Press, the public is assuming, well, the journalists did their job and vetted this information. So there's more likely to be true than if they said it directly. So this is why you have to be so damn careful not to just take what U.S. government or any government official tells you. This is a situation, in my view, where reporters are vicariously living through powerful people that they cover. They want a piece of this political power, and they don't realize that journalism has a different power and is even in some ways more powerful than them, because we can hold those powerful people to account on behalf of the public. This is the crux of the issue. Is your audience, the reader, are you serving their interests, or are you serving the interests of a powerful government like the United States? This is every reporter has to ask themselves, and it's gone. I mean, we did see that maybe in the 1970s more, but right now the prevailing attitude amongst corporate reporters, and I worked 25 years in it, so I know, is to believe the government source. And in this instance, it was Joe Biden who was at the summit in Indonesia, who within hours, who said, no, we don't think it was Russia. I mean, for him to come out and say that, because he knew that what this could mean, what this could lead to. So it was the president of the United States who had to respond to this AP story. And then the AP fired this reporter. I don't know that he admitted that he lied. And I don't know that he ever released who the source is. But I do know that he was fired, and those editors apparently got away with it. And it's their ultimate responsibility, because they were supposed to. I just read before this interview the AP rules on using anonymous sources, and the reporter must reveal to the editor who that source is. Now, I don't know if that happened in this instance, but if the reporter did, the editor then is responsible ultimately for this story going out, because the editor can kill the story. The reporter cannot. So I blame the editors more, but they got away with it. We don't know who the names of the editors are. We do know the name of the reporter. He lost his job. This is a textbook example of what goes wrong with anonymous source. There could be no better one than that. Probably prompted you to have this program, because this story will go down as why you have to be careful and how you should not just take government sources at face value unless you can get, in that instance, at least another source. And maybe from NATO, maybe from a Polish government, from Ukraine. What are they saying? Now, we know what Ukraine was saying. Zelensky ran with it. And this story had the benefit on the side of showing what a liar Zelensky could be, because even after Biden said, no, it wasn't Russia, it was Ukraine, Zelensky continued to say it was Russia. Why? Because they knew they screwed up, that they sent that missile into Poland by mistake. They killed people. So, oh my God, are they going to admit this? They're in big trouble. So let's blame Russia. I mean, isn't that the refrain? Let's blame Russia. Whatever goes wrong, Hillary Clinton lose the election. Let's blame Russia. So this is what he did there. And he was exposed only by Biden himself, only because of the ultimate consequences this could have led to. So we got a real understanding of how Ukrainian government lies, how governments lie, in this instance, Ukraine, and how the gullibility or the desire to believe government so you could be doing their job for them, helping the U.S. government spread democracy. I mean, it's pitiful, the state of American corporate mainstream journalism, and this story epitomizes what can go wrong when you don't know what you're doing in terms of using an anonymous source.
All right, Joe Loria is going to stay with us. Coming up next, now more than ever, governments are cracking down on journalists to reveal their sources and methods. Julian Assange is a prime example. We'll discuss it when we return. Sit tight. The MO will be right back.
By the middle of the 20th century, the Portuguese colonial empire was in an acute crisis. A particularly tense situation had developed in Mozambique. The people of this country were put in a humiliating position. Income inequality, rampant illiteracy, disrespect by the Portuguese for the local traditions led to mass unrest. In 1964, the Liberation Front of Mozambique, Frelimo, began its armed struggle for freedom. The regular army was not easy to resist, but the guerrillas inflicted considerable damage on the invaders' troops. The fighters against the colonial regime were supported by the Soviet Union and China, whereas the United States and Great Britain took the side of the invaders. The Portuguese responded to the guerrillas' attacks with cruel counterinsurgency. However, Frelimo's 10-year courageous struggle was a success. After the overthrow of the fascist regime in Portugal in 1974, the new authorities surrendered. A year later, Lisbon fully recognized the independence of Mozambique. But the victory had been gained at a high price. During the war, Mozambique had lost tens of thousands of its sons and daughters.
So what we've got to do is identify the threats that we have.
It's crazy.
Confrontation, let it be an arms race.
Who is on offense? Very dramatic development.
I personally am going to resist.
I don't see how that strategy will be successful.
Very critical time.
Time to sit down and talk.
Welcome back to The MO. I'm Manila Chan. Joe Loria decided to stick around. Thank you for staying with us, Joe. So, can you think of other examples where anonymous sources or maybe bad sources got published and those in power used that information as a pretext to implement bad policy or something like that? I mean, WMDs come to mind for me.
Yeah, that was Curveball, this anonymous source that everybody ran with it about the WMD. But in the Iraq lead up to the Iraq invasion, we had government officials saying on the record, like Rumsfeld and Cheney and Condoleezza Rice, that they had a WMD. You remember the mushroom cloud statement by Condoleezza Rice. So that was so disgusting. They need to get the public on side in order to go to war. They don't want them interfering with the conduct of war. We see this now in Ukraine, how anybody who challenges the official narrative about Ukraine is kicked off of Twitter, is hounded by trolls, has their PayPal account suspended, as ours did at Conservative News because they didn't like our Ukrainian coverage. We've gotten a NewsGuard gave us a red mark because they said that we published false content about Ukraine, A, that there was a coup in 2014 and that the U.S. Had a role in it, and B, that neo-Nazism has an influence, a large influence in Ukrainian society. Nobody who knows anything about Ukraine would deny that, except this is how disinformation works. It is to deny the obvious facts and stick with the myths that the people have drummed into their heads. So, but a curveball is the example there. They built up a frenzy in this country before the United States and before that invasion. It was the most chilling period that I could remember, even worse than now, the lead up to the invasion of Iraq. I bet people were fired. Like, look at Phil Donahue, who had the highest rated show on MSNBC. He was skeptical. And the guy was not a journalist, really. He had a talk show, and he was more skeptical than the New York Times and CNN than all of them, because he was saying, well, wait a minute, do they really have WMD on there? He had Scott Ritter on. You had people like that, who was the UN weapons inspector, who was saying, well, we don't have evidence that they have the WMD. And he should know. He contradicted Rumsfeld. He contradicted Bush. He contradicted Cheney. And so did Phil Donahue. And his show was canceled. It was the highest rated show, which shows sometimes even politics, when it comes to war and creating a war fever, it trumps even a profit at a private news channel, which is an extraordinary statement right there. So that was one example where anonymous sources played a role, but they also went on the record with this. There are probably many others that don't come to mind immediately right now. where on a lesser, we're talking about war and possible nuclear war, where anonymous sources can be dangerous. But we saw a whole Russiagate comes to mind. So many damn erroneous stories. Somebody made a list. There were like 50 articles in the mainstream media that turned out later to be absolutely false, and most of them had to be retracted. And there was one by an NBC. He got fired, a longtime NBC intelligence reporter who wrote something about Russia being involved. I can't remember what it was. And he got fired. I mean, there are tons. I would say Russiagate is full of fertile with stories that were leaked to the mainstream press that turned out to be absolute rubbish because they had an agenda and they were pushing it hard. And this is a great example of how anonymous sources can abuse reporters who want to be abused because they want to run with the story because it helps their careers. They get scoops. They know diplomats, government officials, the competition between reporters. They play one off against the other. They'll leak to one time, they'll leak to another. The other time, they're fighting one another. And then, by the way, I should mention before I forget this very important point about circular confirmation, because if you do try to get two sources, as you should, and if it's from the same agency or even other agencies, if there is an agreement amongst the intelligence agencies or the administration about what the story is going to be, what the story is, full of lies as it might be, or omitting information or partially true, if they all have that and you get it from one source and one agency and then you call another one, it'll tell you the same thing. Oh, yeah, it's true. And then you have two sources both telling you things that aren't true. So it's impossible to go outside of government sometimes when we're in the policy formulation stage. So sometimes you have to decide, well, I'm not going to run the story. I'd rather be beaten than put out something false, particularly when it's a question of peace and war.
Now, there appears to be a rise in the use of anonymous sources in media these days. I mean, I can't find any precise data on that matter, but if you look at places like the New York Times or CNN, stories are littered with quotes from anonymous sources. Should the public be wary of those stories?
Well, there is this study by Duffy and Freeman, two professors, 2011, which said that it peaked in the 70s and gone down. But that since 2011, it may have gone up again. So it does seem like there is an inordinate amount of anonymous sources being used. All the big editors at the Times and the Post and all say, we don't want to use it. We're trying to cut it down. Apparently, it's like 20% of the stories contain anonymous sources now, or at least at the time of that study. And that came down from like 30 or 40%. So it exists. The public has to be skeptical. Now, that's not their job. Their job is whatever their job is. They don't have the time to find out. They're relying on journalists to spend their full time getting information and vetting that information and being skeptical of that information before presenting it to the public. So there's all about trust. The media only exists between trust in the news organization and the public. If that trust breaks down, they're in big trouble. And the trust is you doing your job. You're not giving me crap. You're giving me stuff that you know is true as far as you could prove it, and that you're not just being a funnel for government disinformation or propaganda being spewed by the government through the mainstream press to make it look like that they've done their job. The government official leaking this realizes that the public has a trust or has had a trust that the journalist is doing his job. And they may not believe it directly from the CIA, but they think, oh, well, we've got a filter here. The newspaper has vetted this information, and they wouldn't put it in the paper if it weren't true. So this is what it's all based on. But I think the public has become more and more skeptical of the reporters who should be skeptical of the government. And that's why this skepticism should be at the level of the government, of the reporter with the government source, not the public having to be skeptical of the reporter and of the newspaper. But that's where we're at right now. I think the polls show that people have lost total interest, faith in mainstream media. And we'll see how poorly they do in terms of the social media. Look on social media. This has opened up a huge problem for the mainstream press. There's a lot of crap on social media. There's a lot of garbage and stuff that's not vetted, that's not true, and this and that. But people are able to speak up now, and they do not trust the big newspapers particularly on these big stories like peace and war, where we are intelligence matters, where they've seen too many failures. And the AP story being, as I said, the epitome of this, but there were many, many ones. All the Russiagate stories that turned out not to be true. All the WMD story, of course, in Iraq, that wasn't true. And there doesn't seem to be any consequences suffered by the mainstream media, except in terms of being fired by their companies, except one instance I mentioned with NBC, but the Washington Post editorial guy, Fred Hyde, who has now passed away in the last year, he wrote all kinds of lies about WMD, and he got promoted. I mean, these people are ridiculous. But we've got the public losing trust. So there's a real crisis here. And at the center of this crisis is the use of anonymous sources that turn out to be peddling false information.
Another aspect to anonymous sources are those things that go viral on social media, right? It's often unvetted, many times untrue. Those stories or tropes, they get traction almost instantly online through social media. We might even call them fake news. But we've seen world leaders such as Justin Trudeau, the Canadian Prime Minister, buy into something he saw on Twitter about Iran and acted almost reflexively to fake Twitter news. How dangerous is this sort of behavior from somebody in his position?
You would assume that the Prime Minister of a NATO member is going to get briefings from his intelligence and he would be told whether that's true or not. That he or someone in his office, I don't think it's a stop, that he himself tweeted. That someone in his office just ran with that shows that the mentality is they're anti-Iranian. They want to do whatever they can to undermine the Iranian government and to prop up these protests. So that kind of a thing, it was about 15,000 death sentences, I believe, someone tweeted. They just immediately reflexively did it. That's the really negative side of social media. There are lots of positives, as I mentioned before. The public can weigh in now. But the negative side is that you could put out anything you want. And the intelligence agencies and others are putting out garbage. They have whole teams working on social media, Facebook and Twitter, putting out disinformation, trolling people. People are paid to do that. So this is cesspool social media. If a prime minister can be fooled, you can imagine anyone can be fooled. You've got to be very careful about that too, about seeing a tweet, looking about who said it, especially if there's not a name. I long decried the idea that you could put up an account on Facebook or Twitter without using your real legal name, that you could just give yourself any handle at all. That to me, I'm skeptical of anything who doesn't want to use their real name. So yes, Twitter has just, especially Twitter has just exacerbated this issue of disinformation getting out there and circulating. And as I say, intelligence services use Twitter to help promote disinformation, and you also get drowned out when you say something that's true if you don't have the followers, right? If you don't get retweeted. So then somebody puts out a lie, if he has people who can retweet him, people think that if because you're big or because you have a blue check, that therefore you are trustworthy. I mean, this is, you have to be doubly skeptical on social media than you do even of the mainstream press, which at this point, one must be really, really skeptical because they're not skeptical of their sources.
All right. The intrepid and award-winning Joe Loria of Consortium News, thank you for being with us. And that's going to do it for this week's episode of Modus Operandi, the show that digs deep into foreign policy. I'm your host, Manila Chan. Thank you for tuning in. We'll see you again next week to figure out the MO.